भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 8, Text number 34 of the Prayers of Queen Kunti. Bharabhattaranayanye Bhuvanava Ivodadho Siddhancha Bhuri Varina Jutto Yatma Bhavatita Bara Avataranaya. Just to reduce the burden to the world. Anye others. Bhuvaha of the world. Navaha boat. Iva life. Udadho on the sea. Siddhantyaha, aggrieved. Buri, extremely. Bharina, by the burden. Jataha, you were born. He, certainly. Atmubhuha, by Brahma. Adhittaha, being prayed for. Translation. Others say that the world, being overburdened like a boat at sea, is much aggrieved, and that Brahma, who is your son, prayed for you, and so you have appeared to diminish the trouble. Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Brahma, or the first living being born just after the creation, is the direct son of Narayan. Narayan, as Gavadakshaya Vishnu, first of all entered the material universe. Without spiritual contact, matter cannot create. This principle was followed from the very beginning of the creation. The Supreme Spirit entered the universe, and the first living being, Brahma, was born on the lotus flower grown out of the transcendental abdomen of Vishnu. Vishnu is therefore known as Padmanabha. Brahma is known as Atmabhu because he was begotten directly from the Father without any contact of Mother Lakshmi Ji. Lakshmi Ji was present near Narayan, engaged in the service of the Lord, and still, without contact with Lakshmi Ji, Narayan begot Brahma. This is the omnipotency of the Lord. One who foolishly considers Narayan like other living beings should take a lesson from this. Narayan is not an ordinary living being. He is the personality of Godhead himself, and he has all the potencies of all the senses in all parts of his transcendental body. An ordinary living being begets a child by sexual intercourse, and he has no other means to beget a child other than the one designed for him. But Narayan, being omnipotent, is not bound to any condition of energy. He is complete and independent to do anything and everything by his various potencies, very easily and perfectly. Brahma is therefore directly the son of the Father and was not put into the womb of a mother. Therefore, he is known as Atmabhu. This Brahma is in charge of further creations in the universe, secondarily reflected by the potency of the omnipotent. Within the halo of the universe, there is a transcendental planet known as Svetadvipa, which is the abode of Kshiradakshaya Vishnu, the Paramatma feature of the Supreme Lord. Whenever there is trouble in this in the universe that cannot be solved by the administrative demigods. They approach Brahmaji for a solution, and if it is not to be solved even by Brahmaji, then Brahmaji consults and prays to the Chiradakshaya Vishnu for an incarnation and solution to the problems. Such a problem arose when Kamsa and others were ruling over the earth, and the earth became too much overburdened by the misdeeds of the Asuras. Brahmaji, along with other demigods, prayed at the shore of the Chiradaka ocean, and they were advised of the descent of Krishna as the son of Vasudeva and Devaki. Some people say that the Lord appeared because of the prayers of Brahmaji. So others say that the world being overburdened like a boat at sea is much aggrieved, and that Brahma, who is your son, prayed for you, and so you have appeared to diminish the trouble. Some have said that the Lord Krishna appeared by the request of Vasudeva and Devaki. Queen Kunti is saying that, and then there are others who say that the Lord appeared at the request of Brahma to reduce the burden of the earth, the overburden of the earth. So the earth, of course, is described to be like a boat at sea, which is a very, very good description in one sense, the planets in one sense float in a sea of air, sometimes Prabhupada says. So, you know, our planets are like boats floating. Now, of course, how the planets float is described in the Bhagavad Gita, in the 15th chapter. I was looking for the Bhagavad Gita over there, there's not one in the temple. Anyway, the word, 15:13, the word is gam avishya. Krishna says that I enter into the planets, and therefore they float in their orbits. That is in the 15th chapter. So actually, because the Lord enters actually within every atom, therefore everything becomes able to float or becomes light. So spirit makes things light. Srila Prabhupada, in his lecture on this verse, gave a couple of nice examples that a live body can float. So generally, if you go to the beach, you see that, you know, of the live bodies, you know, swimming and floating on the top. If someone drowns, they disappear in the water, because they become, the lightness goes, they become heavy. Prabhupada gives another example that, you know, if you want to take a child from one place to another, you just take their hand and you can very easily take them, because they're alive. And so you just hold the hand. It's very light, very easy. If that child is dead, then it's much heavier. Actually, even when a child is asleep, they're much heavier. I remember one time I had one of my daughters who was about 3 or 4 or something. a very heavy-bodied girl for some reason. You know, some children, you pick them up, they weigh like a feathers, and this one, when you pick her up, she, you know, felt very heavy. Anyway, we went for, we were in New Zealand, and I took the family out for the day, and we were going to walk up a mountain. And just as I got to the base, she fell asleep. So I had to carry her up the mountain. Very, very heavy, you know, very, very heavy. So, you know, the more life that's there in the body, so sleeping is slightly, you know, less life being shown in one sense, the more life, the easier it gets. So, you know, Prabhupada gives another example that actually, you know, in the material world, to one degree or another, we are, you know, covered by the material energy. So there are different coverings of, you know, the modes of the material nature. And the more we're covered by the mode of ignorance, actually the heavier we become. And therefore you see that in the higher planetary systems, they are able to, you know, fly and float and, you know, do things like that. Prabhupada says that ultimately the spirit soul, when it becomes you know, completely on the spiritual platform, it can fly back to Vaikuntha. So in this way, you know, giving many different understandings how we can see that the, you know, the spirit soul makes things light. The spirit soul is lighter than the lightest. He has described that, Kunti is saying that the world was overburdened at this particular time, and therefore Brahma prayed. So we ask the question, Prabhupada mentions here in the purport, you know, why was the world overburdened? Here says, such a problem arose when Kamsa and others were ruling over the earth, and the earth became too much overburdened by the misdeeds of the Asuras. So the world feels a great burden. Actually, not just the earth, but every single person and every living entity on the planet carries the burden of sinful activities. You know, when people perform sinful activities, actually everyone carries that burden to one degree or another. And especially Mother Earth, you know, feels that burden very, very much. The presence of demons, basically they're against the principle of devotional service. And because they're against the principle of serving the Supreme Lord, they want to rebel against the religious principles, you know, they're very much addicted to sinful activities. And, you know, their misdeeds create a great burden. And therefore we have, you know, war and pestilence, epidemics, you know, natural disasters, you know, famine, so many different things like this. These things become a great burden. So therefore we see that you know, in, even though there may be some great disaster in one particular place, just like Japan, something like that, actually the whole world shares that, because you know, when they had the tsunami that you know, took out the nuclear site there in Japan. Of course, then so many nuclear, you know, radiation, poisonous sort of substances come into the ocean, into the atmosphere, which, you know, gradually spreads its way around the world into the fish that everyone eats and so many things like this. You know, into the rivers become polluted, the oceans become polluted. It's described that in some parts of the ocean, you know, where the currents sort of converge. There are just, you know, deep under the water, unseen by anyone, but there are just tons and tons and tons of rubbish that get caught in like a current, and they just, you know, like mountains of rubbish. No one sees it, but they just get caught in the sort of cross currents like that. All of this, you know, we all have to deal with, you know, the whole world. And by the touch of spirit, it removes that burden. A very interesting example, I saw a documentary on the Ganges, and I don't know if anyone saw that, because I recently, and they were saying that, you know, even the scientists study the Ganges water, because the Ganges has been touched by the Supreme Spirit, the Krishna, and it has the potency to purify itself. So therefore in India you see many people go drink some, you know, Ganges water. It's considered one of the most polluted rivers on earth. Yet, you know, the scientists cannot understand that people don't get ill. They'll drink the water. It's one of the most, you drink any other water, you know, with a fraction of the pollution of the Ganges, and you'll immediately get ill. And they say that, you know, generally people don't get ill from, you know, even drinking Ganges water. According to their scientific analysis, the Ganges actually purifies itself 25 times faster than any other river on earth. And they have their different theories why that happens. But of course we understand that, you know, the presence of the Supreme, you know, Lord, there is Gangi Devi, of course, and she is a devotee of the Supreme Lord. And by the mood of devotional service to the Supreme Lord, actually the burden becomes somewhat lifted. So in many different ways, you know, when there's simple activities, when there's a lack of a devotional mood, it creates a burden that everyone shares due to simple activities. And when there's the contact of the devotees and the Supreme Lord, that burden becomes removed. So, of course, we know what happens when, you know, when a ship becomes overburdened, it sinks. So, you know, in one sense, you know, the earth and all its residents become somewhat lost. So, therefore, Bhumi Devi, the presiding goddess of the earth planet, she approached Brahma. Generally, as Prabhupada describes here, whenever there is trouble in the universe that cannot be solved by the administrative demigods, they approach Brahmaji for a solution, and if it is not to be solved even by Brahmaji, then Brahmaji consults and prays to Chiradaksha Vishnu for an incarnation and solution to the problems. So in this case, that's what Lord Brahma did when the world was very much overburdened by many demoniac persons who were against the devotional service of the Lord, and you know, addicted to you know, their misdeeds, their rascal. So Lord Brahma, he is the first person in the universe, and as Srila Prabhupada points out here, even from Brahma's birth, Prabhupada says, without spiritual contact, matter cannot create. And this principle was followed from the very beginning of the creation. The Supreme Spirit entered the universe, and the first living being, Brahma, was born on the lotus flower out of the transcendental element of Vishnu. So again, matter itself has no ability to create or you know, even to be animate without the touch of the spirit. And this is demonstrated even in the birth of the first living being, Brahma, who was born from Lord Narayan, Gavadaksha Vishnu, who is known as Padmanabha. So, Lord Brahma, Atmabhu, he approached Lord Vishnu, and again, you know, this universe, it operates in a very similar way. Actually, all of the management of this universe is exactly the way we see that you know, any society is managed. You know, when people read the Vedic literatures, you know, that gradually they understand that there is nothing very extraordinary in one sense. That, you know, whatever we see, just like there's management within a temple, there's management within, you know, the council, there's management within the government, there's management within the country, there's management of the whole planet in one sense. Similarly, there's management of the universe. You know, and these things are described in the Vedas. So, when they're puzzled what to do, just like a state, sometimes, you know, at the present state, they're having a bikie warfare in Australia. You know, sinful activities, you know, the bikies, Hell's Angels, and, you know, others like that, they, you know, the Finks and this one and that one, Road Rebels. You know, they run drugs. Of course, you know, we mostly know them for, you know, the teddy bear run at Christmas, where they all put a big teddy bear on their motorbike, and, you know, public relations, they all go and donate it, and, you know, all the kiddies in the hospitals get teddy bears and things like that. But they're not delivering teddy bears, they're, you know, running drugs and guns and, you know, prostitution and things like that. So, you know, this is a well-known fact. But anyway, there's a biking war at the moment because, you know, Australia is probably easy pickings for criminals. We're a soft target in one sense. A lot of criminals come from different parts of the world. You know, there are a lot of pickpockets coming from in Bulgaria, Romania, places like that, gypsy type people. And, you know, they put in hundreds of thousands of dollars daily. You know, they're trained, actually, they're trained from birth. And it's a family business. That, you know, the children, by the time they're 6 or 7 years old, you know, they're expert. They can pick your pocket. You wouldn't even know they've been there. And by the time they're teenagers, or, you know, in their 20s, they're just, you know, the most professional. It's a family, and it's been passed down many, many generations. And they come, you know, from overseas, and they do that sort of thing. They also do the ATMs. They, you know, put their little bank slots in the ATMs like that. So you know, you put your PIN in, and there's a camera that, you know, identifies your PIN number, and then, you know, gradually they withdraw your money, so many things like that. So, you know, crime is increasing on a huge scale. Actually, sinful activity on all levels. I heard another statistic yesterday that adultery, you know, among women has increased 30% in the last year or so, and they're catching up with the men who are considered, you know, in front of the race of adultery. And you know, abortion, all these sinful activities are increasing, you know, very much. And of course, you know, the governments, in one sense, are powerless. Absolutely powerless. You know, we see, you know, if you watch the news, you'll see, you know, the bikers will come into town. And there might be about 600, 700 of them or something like that. You know, and you've got to a couple of police in the local, you know, police shop. You know, they're not going to do anything. You know. And the bikies are all, you know, armed to the teeth with guns and knives and knuckle busters and shotguns and this and that. And so, you know, the governments are ineffective. They're puzzled. They really don't know. They make a show, you know, there's a bit of, they'll catch one or two, you know, and they'll pass it on the newspapers and what have you. Oh, yeah, we've got these bikies covered like that. But everybody knows, you know, they're just increasing like that. They really can't combat it. Because actually the criminals these days have more money, better weapons, they're better organized, and more numbers, you know. If you get a government job, you know, the police force, you know, you're going to get less pay, and, you know, more restrictions on your weapons, and, you know, you got less backup, less organized. You know, then you know, you got the corruption within the police force itself. It's a well-known fact. Recently they've had many documentaries about, you know, different crime sprees that, you know, in Australia, stemming all the way back to, you know, the 1920s up to now. And right throughout the whole thing, all of the investigations were severely marred by people in the police force, you know, working for the actual bad guys. So these things are well known. So very, very difficult. So when the Prabhupada used to address this problem a lot, because it was in the, you know, even so many years ago when Prabhupada was here, I think it was in the papers in New York, you know, crime, why, what to do. Prabhupada addressed that issue a lot whenever he spoke to people. You know, basically they need Krishna consciousness. So here also, you know, they will approach, you know, the supreme authority, they approach Brahma. So Brahma is like the guru. He is the head of the Brahma Sampradaya. Of course there are four Sampradayas. One from Lakshmi, one from Brahma, one from the Kumaras, one from Shiva. Mm. So Lord Brahma and the guru approaches Krishna, you know, when you know, if there's something that you know, the demigods, when the demigods cannot rectify something themselves, they will approach the Lord. Although generally the guru always approaches Krishna, you know, the Vaishnava, the pure devotee guru, they always approach Krishna on every matter. Actually, there was one time there was a nice interview in New York, and Prabhupada with some of his disciples, Ramaswara Swami and some others, and there was a reporter there and asking Srila Prabhupada, you know, who decides who will be the next guru when you've gone like this? You know, and who decides, who manages the different temples like that? And Prabhupada was describing Krishna decides. Krishna decides. And then he was asked, well, so, you know, how do you know what Krishna wants? And so Srila Prabhupada was, you know, describing that, you know, the devotee always consults Krishna, and Krishna tells the devotee, you know, such and such. And so some of the disciples were explaining to the, you know, interviewer, who was looking a little puzzled, you know, as Krishna talking, that they were explaining about the parampara system, that, you know, the, you know, Srila Prabhupada's guru, you know, told him to, you know, preach Krishna consciousness and to go to the West, and then Srila Prabhupada gives his instructions to his disciples, and so it comes down in disciplic succession like this. So if we follow disciplic succession, we can actually get, you know, the intelligence, we become purified and we get good instruction, and that instruction coming from disciplic succession and that intelligence, you know, from purification, that is, you know, synonymous with Krishna speaking to us. And Srila Prabhupada said, no, no, no. You know, the pure devotee just asks Krishna and Krishna tells him. Like this. And then, you know, his disciples say they realize. And one of them said, oh, are you, I'm talking about, you know, the lower level devotees, and you're talking about the topmost level devotees. Prabhupada said, yes, you know, like this. So, you know, on the topmost level of devotees, just like here, Queen Kunti, you know, and these different devotees, you know, they just directly speak to Krishna. Srila Prabhupada, you know, he can just directly speak with Krishna. And Krishna will directly, you know, speak with Srila Prabhupada. He, you know, Srila Prabhupada says that actually Vedic knowledge is given to everyone. You know, perfect Vedic knowledge is given to everyone because actually Krishna is in the heart of every living being. But according to one's qualification, one is fit to receive that knowledge. Actually, you know, to one degree or another, Krishna is speaking to every living entity. But, you know, according to their qualification, purification, they have the ability to, you know, hear, you know, and directly perceive what Krishna is speaking to them. So the topmost level of devotees, they can just perfectly, you know, directly speak to Krishna. For us, you know, we cannot do that. Apart from the, you know, very, very elevated devotees, we don't, you know, we have some disturbance, a slight lack of qualification for us to understand what Krishna is directly speaking to us. And therefore we approach the Guru. And we ask the Guru, what does Krishna want? And the Guru will tell us because he knows things directly. Even on the level of Guru, you know, the Guru, as you say, you know, topmost level Gurus like Srila Prabhupada, they may directly speak with Krishna. And others, even though they may act as Guru, may not have that facility, you know, if they're not on that most elevated platform, pure devotional service. And therefore, you know, their, you know, instruction from Krishna may come more through parampara and through the intelligence that Krishna is giving within the heart. And that. Even Brahma, you know, Brahma, the head of our sampradaya, you know, when he speaks with Krishna, or you know, actually he doesn't approach Krishna directly. Generally, you know, he, if there's some difficulty, he would go to the shore of the ocean of the Chiradaka ocean, and he will offer prayers, usually the Purusha Shukta, as we use in deity worship. And he may not even directly see Chiradaksha Vishnu, let alone Krishna, and but he may hear directly the instruction within his heart. And even the other demigods and saints and sages may not hear that, and then Brahmaji will speak like that. So there are different levels of devotees with different levels of qualification to, you know, directly or indirectly communicate with Krishna. But still, if one is under the shelter, you know, it doesn't affect the devotee's ability to perform pure devotional service or to perform their service properly. One may think, oh, how can I serve Krishna? I can't talk to Krishna directly. But, you know, if we take shelter within the parampara of great Vaishnavas, you know, all the way up to the six Goswamis, and many of whom can directly communicate with Krishna. And therefore, if we follow their instructions, it's as good as. Srila Prabhupada used to say that, he would say, we may not be pure devotees, but if we follow the instruction of a pure devotee, we become as good as. We're not pure devotees, but if you follow the instruction, you're as good as. Just like, sometimes someone may be going to the hospital, the wife is about to give a baby. I have a nephew like this, and they get halfway there and the baby's coming. So, they will ring the hospital. Oh, the baby's coming, I can see it, what will I do? And the doctor will say, you do this, like this, and they follow the instructions of the qualified doctor, they're as good as the doctor. Like that. They're not a doctor, but they're as good as. Like that. But according to our qualification, of course, Srila Prabhupada used to always give the encouragement and the incentive that if we, chant 16 rounds of the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, follow the four regular principles, preach Krishna consciousness, avoid the offences, follow the regular work that Prabhupada has set out for us, one day you will speak to Krishna, face to face. You will see him face to face. You will speak to him directly. The Prabhupada would say that. He would put that directly within our grasp. Not that, this is a rare thing. I am the only pure devotee. Prabhupada, anyone who properly follows, Prabhupada gives that assurance that this is for you. Anyone in ISKCON who properly follows, that is it, Prabhupada is offering. You directly, one day, face to face, speak to Krishna. Here, Lord Brahma, he prayed on the shore of the Shiradhara ocean. Brahma receives knowledge and he distributes that knowledge, just as I do in the four different sampradayas. Therefore Kunti says that some say that because Brahma prayed for you, therefore you appeared. Some say that. Actually, a little later on, Queen Kunti does describe the most confidential reason why Krishna appears. So the Prabhupada summed it up in his lecture on this particular verse. He says that actually, although Krishna in his various incarnations do appear to protect the devotees and to kill the demons and establish religious principles, therefore the Lord Narayan has four hands. In his two hands he holds a club and a disc, which are meant for the killing. So we take the club, smash someone over the head, demon. The disc, might cut the head off. These are meant for killing. The lotus and the conch. So with the conch, as we see in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna bugled his conch and declared, my devotees will never perish. Like this. And he also holds the lotus, which is a sign of benediction. Lakshmi also, therefore, holds the lotus flower as a sign of benediction. If you want to be benedicted by Krishna, today is Rukmini Dwadasi. On Rukmini Dwadasi it says that if you offer Rukmini's Lord, Lord Krishna, flowers according to the season, all your desires will be fulfilled. The benediction. Actually, I was dressing the deities this morning. Usually, the last thing I do is I put the flower and the tulsi leaf on the lotus feet. Sometimes Jagannath Swami, beats me to it. He did this morning. So I had to go out in the garden and pick a couple of roses and come back in and especially place them there. What's that? Jagannath Bhagavad. What did I say? Jagannath Bhagavad. And, yeah. So if you offer some flowers to Lord Sri Krishna today, this Rukmini Dvadasi describes that all you'll be benedicted by Rukmini. Says all your desires will be fulfilled. Be careful what you desire. So, Krishna, he has his Narayan feature and Vishnu feature has four hands. But actually, the real reason that Krishna appears is actually for his own pleasure. He doesn't appear like us according to our karma. Or he's not actually under the obligation of anyone's request. He's not obligated. He's certainly not obligated by the request of even the demigods, even up to Lord Brahma. There are many persons, especially the Hindus, who actually believe that Krishna and even Ram and some of the various incarnations are in fact subordinate to demigods like Shiva and Brahma. That is, they believe that. But actually, Lord Krishna is completely independent. He's not bound by any cause. Therefore, when he appears in the Bhagavad Gita, he says, "Atma Manya," that I appear by my own free will, by my own spiritual potency. Not by any material cause. Atma Maya means by my internal spiritual potency, not by anything coming from the material cause or request from the demigod. Krishna is not obligated and not bound in any way. Lord Krishna and Lord Narayan, Krishna's expansion, there is no one who is equal to the Lord. Though in India, they have that term Dirija Narayan, God. You worship God as a poor man or as a beggar. They believe that ultimately the impersonalists, the Mayavadis, believe that ultimately, Vishnu, Krishna, Narayan, Shiva, Brahma, the poor man, the dog, any living entity, ultimately they're all equal. Like that. And therefore they may think, Brahma requested, therefore Krishna come, he is subordinate to the will of the demigods, the demigods and the two. So in many different ways they can, Lord Ram, took benediction from Shiva. Arjuna prayed to Durga Devi before the battle of Kurukshetra. People think like this. Therefore, when they read the Shastras, they think that they're all equal. But here we see that actually he is not, because Krishna is the master or the lord of Rukmini, the goddess of fortune, the lord of Lakshmi. How is it possible that one who is known as Madhava, we sing Jaya Radha Madhava, Madhava, the husband of the goddess of fortune, how is the husband of the goddess of fortune, who Goloka Vrindavan is served by unlimited Lakshmis, goddesses of fortune, how is it possible he can be equal to a poor man? That is not possible. We see that Lakshmi Devi, she is always serving the lotus feet of Lord Narayan. There it describes that when Brahma was born, Lakshmi was present. She's always serving Krishna or Narayan in one feature or another. Lakshmi is always present whenever Krishna is there. One time, you know, someone asked Prabhupada, you know, where was Lakshmi, or where was, you know, Radharani on the battle of Kurukshetra? And Prabhupada says, you may not see, but she's there in one capacity. He's always there with Krishna. You know, the fact that Krishna is the controller of the material energy and not bound by the material energy is demonstrated in the way he gave birth to Brahma. Because, you know, he displayed that by giving birth from his navel, without sexual intercourse, without the help of his consort, he was still able to give birth. So breaking all the material rules. Actually, anyone else, no one else, everyone who you know, creates, you know, offspring in this world, they're all bound by certain laws. But the Lord showed that when he manifests Brahma, that he was not bound. He's omnipotent. And therefore, he is, you know, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, certainly. So, Krishna appears, but he does so not because he's bound by any cause, any material cause, but he's always the controller of the material energy. And therefore, he comes for his own, you know, pleasure pastimes, which will be described a little bit later. And there are many different personalities who claim to be, yes, you know, you are God, I am God, you know, why bother going to the churches or the temples, you know, we are all God. And Prabhupada says that, you know, not that sort of God who is, you know, Krishna is independent. You know, he acts independently of the material creation. But you see these other gods, so-called gods, if they get a toothache, then they are dependent on the dentist, you know. So, Krishna is not that sort of God. He is independent, you know, you don't see in, you know, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had a lot of feasts when he was here, you know, gulab jamuns and a lot of sweets and things like that. You don't see that he was going to the dentist, and, you know, or, you know, had too much sweet you know, the other day. You don't see Lord Krishna, you know, going to the dentist and the doctor and so many different things like that. So, actually the world is overrun, overburdened by people who are very sinful, so sinful in fact that, you know, in this day and age they claim to be God. And Prabhupada says, one who claims to be God or equal to God, that person is the most sinful person. They're the most sinful people because persons who claim to be God, they can justify the most sinful activity. You know, generally you find that an ordinary person, if they do something wrong, oh, I've done wrong, you know, I should be punished, you know, I wish I hadn't done. But a person who believes that they're God, that will justify the most sinful, heinous activities.
Dogs.
Yes, that dog. So they're the most sinful person. So at the moment this world is very much overburdened. And therefore, although Krishna wanted to come for his own pleasure, display his own pleasure pastimes, he also did fulfill the request of Brahma simultaneously. Although generally that's not his mission. So I'll just leave it there if anyone has any comments or questions. Everyone satisfied? Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.